Hello and welcome again to the CGW podcast. This is Jeff Green, editor-in-chief of Computer Gaming World magazine, and with me once again are the editors of Computer Gaming World in all their glory, and they are as follows:
Ryan Scott,
Sean Elliott,
Darren Gladstone,
and our wonderful sound man,
Scott Asnault,
who may or may not talk.
We'll I see. Might. Who knows?
If we're interesting enough for Scott, he'll chime in.
Yeah.
I wanted to start off with one quick reader letter that we got. We got two emails in a row about our lovely former managing editor, Kristen Salvatore. And I just wanted to read one because it's been making me laugh. Hello, as a VP of development for a large engineering firm, I don't usually go gaga over pretty faces, but Kristen is something else. Is there any way I could send her a small token of my admiration, perhaps a small diamond ring, or dinner in Paris? Here's my favorite part. By the way, I also have an extra American Express card and love to go shoe shopping. So what I want to know is, what does he mean by extra American Express card? What does that mean? Extra?
Like, I just have like one floating around.
One that he has with his wife, and then the other for the random women he picks up on editorial staffs.
His gaming mistress.
So what I wanted to tell you, Jay, the way you could send her a small token of your admiration is at...
Because
that's where she is now, and I'm sure she'd love to hear from you. And,
sorry. Oh, you know, we're gonna have to talk about that. That's that.
No, don't edit this out. I'm sorry, Kristen.
Oh, I can see the thousands upon thousands of emails she's now going to receive.
Okay, this was actually just my evil plot to break PC Gamer's mail server.
There you go.
Can I read the other one about Kristen? Come on. It's just one sentence.
All right.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Ryan. I have to ask everything I do from Ryan. Okay.
Ryan's the boss.
Okay, this one goes, I've been subscribing to CGW for a few years now, and I've always considered myself straight. But after seeing Kristen with her whip, I'm not so sure anymore. That's from Jessica. That might be the best letter we've ever got.
And now the show's over. We're done.
Thank you, everyone. Good night. And remember to tip your waitress.
So Kristen doesn't work here anymore. We're sorry, Jessica, but we wouldn't mind if you came by still, because that's a pretty hot letter.
You were saving that up all weekend.
Wait a minute. This is signed Jesse, as in Uncle Jesse.
Oh, no. That changes my whole worldview. I feel very nervous inside
now. I keep imagining Uncle Jesse in his overalls.
Yet I still want to meet him. Okay, that silliness is out of the way. Let's get on to the important business of gaming.
Harumph.
Last week here in... no harumphing. Last week here... was the glorious pre-E3 week for those of us in the gaming business. If you don't know what pre-E3 is, I guess first of all you have to know what E3 is, which is Electronic Entertainment Expo that they hold every year in Los Angeles, which is sort of like the big gaming industry shindig to do. What do you want to call it?
Flipping off of Hollywood?
Thingy. It's the big convention of the gaming business where all the companies make their big announcements for the year. Everybody has their press conferences and shows us stuff that we see 5 years from now, et cetera, et cetera. And over the years, all the game companies started to realize that the press, they can never get our attention at E3 for various reasons. The reasons including that we're hungover every day. We're overbooked every day. What are the other reasons?
Well, just so many announcements happening at once. It just gets everything just lost in the noise.
Right.
So many greasy grommets holding swag bags in line.
Yeah, we're trying to get through lines of 400 guys wanting to get their photo taken. Yeah, with
back
some.
Sweat in City of Villains cape. It's a, it looks like a napkin tied to their neck. It's
like some dude from Shecky's Game Shack trying to push
I was actually going to go for the fun part. You know, it's just you're too busy looking at the booth babes.
Oh, they don't even have that anymore. Sorry.
Oh, they killed him.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, they actually killed him.
I never looked once at them.
Right. Yeah,
I respect my wife. hi, dear. So anyway, E3 has always been it's always fun, but for the press, it's a bit manic. Well, it's manic for everybody, but it's very hard to get our attention as press people and to focus on the games they have to show. So somewhere along the lines, one of the companies came up with the brilliant idea I don't know who started.
I think it was Microsoft.
It was Microsoft, yeah, with GameStock. Yeah. To have an event before E3 where they got our undivided attention. They didn't have to share it with any other game company. Well, now they all do them. So over the course of 1 week. So basically now before the week of E3, we have another week that's basically just E3 all over again.
And it's getting worse now. It almost seems like there's like other companies that don't have, like, you know, there's the big ones, you know, Activision, Ubisoft, EA. They have it this one consolidated week, but then there are other companies that kind of do it a couple weeks before that. So it turns into like a month of E3 now.
Yeah. And then they do special events for the judges, you know, for the E3 judges.
Part of it, though, I think we should be thankful for. I think it's a nod to us in print with our lead times so that when we can put out an issue that comes out around the time of the show and we're looking at the same stuff, not a month later.
Right. No, you're probably right.
Oh, yeah.
And also, really, truly, if we take advantage of it, it is a way to actually see these games and not have to fight the crowds, the lump and mass at E3.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that, I mean, they don't even show you at those events, though. I mean, like, EA just announced CNC.
Command and Conquer,
yeah. So,
right.
You know, we didn't see that.
Or Spore.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's just a tactic that a lot of companies are doing. It's like, we'll tease you, come and, you know, come spend, like, 5 hours at our pre-E3 event, and then dedicate another, you know, hour or two to seeing the rest of the games at the show, or, like, we'll give you a teaser of the game.
Right. Right. I mean, all the cool stuff we ever see is behind closed doors at E3, right? It's never the stuff that's out there on the floor. And they weren't really showing anything in pre-E3 that was the behind closed doors stuff, right? Or did they?
I think at Ubisoft they did a little of that. But yeah. Obviously, NDA is signed. I can't say anything yet.
Yeah, so we saw some cool stuff and we can't talk to you about it.
Haha.
It's increasingly tied to exclusives and cover stories, too. Same reason about Spore. We've got nothing to complain about. But,
right.
So, a lot of that going on.
Right. No, it's true. We have the Spore cover story for our June issue, which is no secret. People know that. I mean, I've blogged about it before. But EA wasn't showing it at their pre-E3 day.
That's good for us, though. Guarantees that, you know, Shecky's Game Shack doesn't go online and beat our story.
And, you know, there is a Shecky's Game Shack, and it's probably going to, like, probably gonna sue us now or something.
Uh-huh. Yeah, don't knock
we're not
Shecky's
talking about,
Game Shack.
We're talking about SCC. It's like a couple extra seasoners from Sweden or
You're
something.
You're going to be applying for a job at Shecky's Game Shack if you get Ziff Davis in trouble. Sorry, I didn't mean to threaten you on air. That was a little tacky. I'm sorry,
forget,
Sean.
I don't forget about that.
It's my cell phone ringing.
Right.
Okay. Before this spirals even further out of control, let's move on to a question that we got from the listening audience. And I want to remind everybody to please send us your questions because we didn't get that many this month. Maybe we've already answered everything you ever need to know, and so there's nothing left. But if you do have any questions, send a letter to cgwletters@ziffdavis.com with podcast in the subject line, or just go to our message board at cgw.oneup.com. Now, this guy's question is, he asks, how much should episodic content sell for? I forget where I read this, but Sin is going to put its first episode into retail probably for $30, and both seem to be likely. What's both? He mentions one game. Well, whatever. Both seem likely to sell for $20 on Steam.
Maybe Half-Life?
Maybe, yeah. Additionally, if you're only getting 5 to 6 hours of gameplay, doesn't $20 seem a little high? So that's his question. I thought that was a good topic. How do we feel about what companies should be charging for episodic game content?
Gotta ask us after we've played Sin episodes and episode one.
Let me ask this question. How many... I don't remember because I did it in little spurts. How many hours solid gameplay was Half-Life 2? And that was, what, $50?
I did it my first time in about 10 or 11 hours, and I heard some people it was about 16.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how much you explore the area, but I think I did it in about, like, 18 or so.
Well, that's a good question in a way, right? I mean, are you getting less, you know, gaming per hour than you normally would anyway at a retail purchase? I guess it depends on the game, right? I mean, the recent downloads of the Bone game, which has been an online only thing, it was disappointing to me. At least the first one was, because that was about 3 or 4 hours, and they were charging $20. And the whole notion of that game was they're going through the Bone comic book over a series of episodes that correspond to the comic books, and each episode was going to cost $20. Mm-hmm. Well, that means to play what would have in the old days been one adventure game for, you know, whatever, 12 hours was now starting to cost a ridiculous amount of money. You know, $20 a pop. If there's four episodes, that's $80. You know,
I think there are other ways to make it more worth our money too. One of them that's in, it's still up in the air up until the very last minute, but they're looking at implementing a number of multiplayer modes to it. Mm-hmm. Some unique. And in addition to that, some other mini games. So those, for example, would help you get more money out of it. I mean, if the multiplayer mode's got any legs on it, it definitely would. And then other things like editor's commentary, which will be in episode one. So not the biggest bonus in the world, but it definitely, you might want to play it through a second time, get some more hours out of it, checking it out.
I think the one thing, like at least I remember from like Sin 1 back in the day, was that they really kind of created this whole world that they kind of encourage you to kind of mess around with everything and like push stuff around in the environment and like look for little hidden, you know, stuff everywhere. And that can kind of like after you go through the main mission, you can come back and that can add to some of the replayability, just looking for those little hidden extras.
That's a good question too. I mean, you think you guys will be more inclined to replay these, you know, single player games because you know they're more doable in that time frame? Because, you know, say if you're going to fire up Deus Ex again, you know you've got a big chunk of investment there for you.
I guess so. I guess that's true. Maybe. I just wonder about the price point on these things.
Yeah.
You know, like once you start getting over a certain amount, it's just like I'll start balking at wanting to cough up that money. It's like buying music. It's easy to spend 99 cents on an album or on a song, or $9.99 on an album. But even the few times that I've been on iTunes and they, for whatever reason, they've gone over the $9.99 over the sweet $10 spot, I start balking. You know, it starts seeming less like a casual investment.
I guess the real trick would be like, what are some comparably priced, like $20 expansions that have come out? And, you know, United Offensive, how much was that? Or Secret Weapons of World War II for, you know, Battlefield 1942?
Right.
Same price.
But, I mean, those are pretty huge, though.
Right. I mean, like, those added a lot for those games. I mean, it's kind of like, until I actually see the final package with Sin, it's kind of like, you know, got to wait and see. Maybe there's a lot more to it than just a simple six-hour playthrough.
Maybe we're getting caught on just the wording here. Maybe episodic content sounds like less than expansion.
If they do what Sean says, where they have the various types of multiplayer and the games within the games type of thing, that might add to, it's like, okay, you get a solid, for the single player timeline, you get a solid, you know, 5 to 6 hours of gameplay. But if you want to, you know, if you really want to dissect this puppy, you have a bunch of hidden little things in there, just like, we encourage you to go explore, which turns it into 10 to 12 hours of gameplay. Now, would that be worth $20 to $30?
And then all the assets are open for being fully moddable.
Yeah. I mean, would that make it open? I mean, worth that, you know, $20 to $30?
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. I guess it just will depend on the quality of that 5 or 6 hours.
And that was going to be my other question was, you know, how good is this game?
Right. I'm not one for, like, I would much rather have a great short game than a, you know, half-decent long game. I never finish games anyway unless they're short and contained.
Right, let's look at, like, some of, you know, CGW. Everyone here loved Riddick. My experience, you know, I played both the PC, reviewed it for CGW, and console, which I reviewed for EGM. It took me about 6 hours, and I loved the game. And I really didn't have a problem with it at the time. So that's worth taking into consideration. Another one, Fear, is a short game. Mm-hmm. Condemned, short game that's coming out to PC right now.
Call of Duty 2 was relatively short.
It was a little longer than that. I mean, it was longer than Riddick.
It was longer than Riddick.
But Riddick, I specifically say, because it didn't have a multiplayer component to it, but it did have a director's commentary, sort of the originator of this sort of stuff we're seeing now on this Steam episode type product.
Mm-hmm. I'm all for digital downloads. I mean, I think it's a great idea. I just wonder, you know, if they're pricing these episodes correctly. And maybe you're right with all the stuff you're getting here from Sin. Maybe that is a decent price.
I think, yeah, it's a question we should come back to once this product starts coming out. Because if it's not good, it'll be really easy to answer.
Actually, now let's just keep pontificating endlessly about something we don't know.
Right. And if it's great, I think we'll be happy with it.
As we stroke our chins.
It's like comic books. You know, you spend $4 for an issue sometimes. Half the time, you can't believe you did it. The other time, you're like, I could live with that.
Yeah. You know, I've been clean sweeping my house, and I found, they're sitting right there every day to stare at the four long boxes of comics in my house, because I quit reading it's almost like 2 years now. And I contemplated actually just taking the long boxes out onto the sidewalk just with a, you know, free take me sign. And I just couldn't do it because I thought, do you know how much money that is?
Yeah, but you can't. I mean, I don't know. Think of all the other stuff that you bought and you have laying around your house that you don't, like old shoes. You're not thinking to yourself, that's like $800 worth of shoes right there. I mean, but for some reason with comics, because the lie when we're kids, no, the lie is that this is an investment. You're going to get your money back. But that's all BS, you know? I mean,
yeah.
Unless you have like the super hardcore pristine condition comics. And
it's more painful with the comic books. Maybe this is just my Jewish guilt or something. But I feel like it's just like a testament of wasted money, you know? Like the shoes, you got to wear shoes, right? So, of course, you're always going to buy them and you're going to wear them out. So they had a good life. But with the comics, it's like I'm looking at thousands of dollars that I invested, like, and now I don't care about them. So why did I buy all those?
What about your old VHS tapes? I know you've got Land Before Time 4 or something like that sitting around. You know it. Anyway,
maybe.
So hey, we could tie in back to the games by we were talking about price and are we willing to pay certain things? One solution that we all know to driving the cost down is advertising. And Darren's news note of the
day. Nice segue.
Master segue.
Beautiful.
That was pretty good.
I think Sean's going to be the new segue guy.
Okay.
So, okay.
He was going to point to you for the wrap it up.
It, Darren.
All right. So today there was a, across the wire came out news that Kuma Reality Games, the guys who made the War Games series for a little bit, they started getting in on the corporate-sponsored advergaming. So basically, the full free experience, but you get to deal with a free ad, basically, as well. So their first...
Product placement.
It's all about product placement.
Free episode.
So it's the episode of the game is called The Dino Hunters, and
sorry.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's like the SpaghettiOs captured in dinosaurs.
Seriously, it's
the dinosaur hunt.
Oh, yeah. It's like the back of the thing, like trying to connect the dots and create the. Yeah, exactly.
There we go.
So basically, the first episode brought to you by Chick Quattro,
say that with a straight face.
No, it's like for your dinosaur to get the smoothest shave possible.
Is that that's the four blade one, thus the Quattro.
I guess the Quattro would kind of factor
if
in.
If T-Rex
there.
Was,
I thought
mammal,
there's five.
You totally
now.
Use it
for that extra scale. Anyway, so it's written by a former EIC of Maxim magazine.
Okay.
And it's using, I think, the Half-Life One
it's
engine.
No, it's two. It's two.
Is it two?
It's Source
so
engine.
It's so weird. So basically, what you do is you start off. It's just really tacky stuff, and you grab a bazooka and you fire a paradox.
What about before that? What about when you're shaving yourself before you go dinosaur hunting?
Yeah, that's right. Well,
with the Quattro.
Well, actually, no. It's one of the NPCs shaving himself in the mirror.
Okay.
And then you see some cheesy babe, and she walks over, and
do you get a Quattro as a weapon?
Sadly, no.
That would be nice, like the razor gun in Unreal.
Right. Oh, but that would be a bad message. You know, bad. You know, use our product to kill your classmates, kind of thing, right?
Right. to kill the neighboring pterodactyls.
Dinosaurs. So I watched over. I heard Darren. I heard it crashing your computer, and so I hear this. I mean, you've got a really nice rig over there. So I walk over, and I hear a kick. I'm like, oh, so you got a? I don't know. What do you got? Some Unreal? You got Unreal?
I got a DJ remix of like Dives.
No, I thought I was like. Well, maybe you got like UT 2007 or something, and your computer's not up to it after all. Instead, I see this very assy looking, you know, not using the Source engine well game, and you're basically using Half-Life 2 weapons with the same audio to shoot pterodactyls and whatever.
But hey, it's a free game.
Well, we're not going to get any advertising from the Quattro people in CGW now.
Ooh. We can edit that out.
Well, but I mean, they're not trashing the ad. They're just trashing the game.
Right. Actually, it's a fine razor.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
Wow. No, actually, you know what?
He was very clean shaven.
You know what? I got to tell you. Babyface smooth. Babyface smooth. No, but, I mean, like, I like the idea of giving me a game for free. I don't mind the idea of like advertising in games, as so long as it's context sensitive.
Yeah, I don't mind that idea is like the same. You know what Robert's touched on in Scorched Earth before. You basically go to the Tide spot and wash your clothes mini game or whatever. You know,
right? Right.
And it's like that, but it's. I mean, it's compared to that sort of thing. I guess I take it back.
Did I ever tell you guys when Budweiser I got called in by that ad campaign that it was by these marketing folks working with Budweiser. This was right after EverQuest had gotten really hit it big, and somebody in the Budweiser organization or maybe their PR firm read about it and said, "Hey, this online charging people every month thing is great. Maybe this is another way for Budweiser to make money." So they came up with the idea for basically like. I'm not making this up. It was like World of Budweiser. You know, they didn't. That's not Tepper. What they called it. But it was like a Budweiser massive multiplayer game set in Budweiser Land. I guess I don't know. You just drink beer, go on quest for beer or something. So they actually called me in to get my take on it. You know, what do you think as a gaming editor of this Budweiser massive multiplayer game? And it was unbelievable to me that they even took it seriously enough to bring somebody in to talk about it, that they were wasting their time. Because once I sat down and was telling them, like, well, you know, if you do this kind of thing, like, you have to have servers. You have to buy servers. You have to maintain them. You have to have people online 24/7. You have to keep making content for people to play. I mean, basically, by the time I got out of their office, I had them convinced to just do, like, Flash-based, you know, like solitaire games with the Budweiser logo on.
Yeah.
You guys may want to aim a little lower.
But I can't see people I can't see people downloading Dino Hunter. And the reason being is when we were researching our 101 free game story, I was playing a game called War Rock, and it's kind of like the unemployed man's answer to Battlefield. And I was playing it thinking that it was just going to be vacant, but there were a lot of people in there.
I mean,
very, very full servers. And I asked the people, "Hey, what are you guys doing? You know, what are you fools doing in here?" And they were just angry that I thought that was a question worth asking. I mean, they loved Warrock, but I think it was also because they didn't have any experience with anything else besides Warrock. So I think there's people.
Plus, the price is right.
The moral of that story is that there's some Dino Hunters out there in the making.
I guess so. But does anybody have a problem with like real like advertising in their games? Like if you drive by, if you're playing a racing game and you drive by a Pepsi ad, does that bug you?
Don't they already have that in there, though?
Well they do. I'm asking if you think that's a problem. Because I think that'd be a great way for companies to sell their products these days.
And more importantly, it'd be actually really great if that would help make games cheaper.
Right.
I mean, instead of me having to pay $50 for a game, make it 25 or 30 if you have context-sensitive ads in the game.
I think it's obvious that this is going to happen more and more. I mean, these advertisers are looking at kids watching TV less because they're playing video games. They're going to want to go to where the eyeballs are. It's the same reason that, like, the U.S. Army made America's Army, right? Well, these kids aren't going to see our Army ads on television, so let's make them a game.
I think they even have some far more devious or clever, depending on how you look at it, solutions, too. So, for example, last E3, I was talking to a guy that was just leaving EA to work for, let's just say, a certain RPG maker in Canada. And and he basically revealed that one of the things that EA was researching as an answer is to basically tell players in multiplayer games that you can wear sponsored product, and in exchange we'll give you some sort of in-game incentive. If it's in-game money, perhaps, maybe it's other some sort of in-game, very, you know, real in-game incentive. And the result is that when you're walking around, every time you see this guy, he's wearing a McDonald's shirt or something. So not only are you driving past it a million miles an hour, every time you talk to this dude or go quest with him or skate with him or frag with him, whatever you're doing, you're seeing his logo on his shirt.
So those are like those guys who drive around in the cars with the vinyl on top of their car with.
Yeah, yeah, just like, it's basically like that, or the people you
people who get tattoos on their head forehead. For $10,000 or something.
But wait, this could be in any game.
Yeah, like EA was definitely looking at it, and when you look at it in those terms, you can imagine it working really well in, say, like NBA Jam Online.
Right, but it wouldn't work well in World of Warcraft. Maybe I don't want to be questioning with a guy in a McDonald's outfit.
Imagine it, though, in say, auto assault or something, you know?
Well, auto assault, maybe, but again.
And Seasoft, I'm not saying they have anything to do with it, but it's out there, right. And I would be surprised if we don't start seeing that sort of thing.
But it's got to be context sensitive, or it's going to it's going to suck.
Well, I guess you could advertise the local Ren Faire in World of Warcraft. That's about it. But
yeah.
In games like that, though, where there's a society and a culture, I think it's fine because you'll see some really, I mean, who's to say that the players aren't going to just ostracize and exile those people?
What, you want to see Jack-in-the-Box inside of Azeroth?
Right.
Is that
what
you're saying?
But those players can decide to police that on their own against the game, you know? I'm sure, unless the company says, hey, you cannot haze people for what they wear in this game. Otherwise, they can be like, Clown's wearing Jack-in-the-Box. He's not, you know.
I would gank those noobs. I'm sorry.
Didn't PlanetSide have ads for, like, Burger King and Coca-Cola? Yeah.
Actually, they also had an ad for Deuce Bigalow, whatever.
Oh, my God.
The animal.
Since the game has gone totally free now, I actually played again recently just to see where it's at. And there's ads for, like, Under Armour and whatever, because apparently in the future they still have that brand of underwear.
Wow. Whatever. What are they, like, billboards or something? Or?
Well, yeah, it's like when you go to, like, the... when you get revived or something, you go and, like, equip up with some ammo, and right above the ammo refilling is station is this big ad.
Your resurrection sponsored by Dick Lasers.
Exactly.
Well, you know, and playing Fear recently, you know, they have all the Coke machines or the soda machines in there.
But that's the thing. They're all generic, right?
Yeah.
It
would be very easy to have them as a specific.
And those are the ones I wouldn't mind.
Yeah. All games on Channel 1.
Channel 1.
Does that make sense? No?
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It does.
Yeah, it does. So we're agreed then? In-game ads good, but bad if...
If in World of Warcraft.
Somebody's eating a Jumbo Jack because I'm trying to, you know, kill some gnolls in World of Warcraft. That's going to suspend my disbelief, you know?
What if you get
those
stats?
Are real.
What if the incentive, though, is like your sword gets +5 whatever if you wear the J-Bo t-shirt?
+5 of grease.
Oh, jeez.
Debilitates.
Let's move on, shall we? I think we've killed this one.
Oil slick.
J-Bo sword.
Oh, jeez.
All right. Okay. Do we have anything else to talk about this week?
I think we got it under wraps.
Do we have it under wraps?
Got it under
wraps. Ryan, do you have any... Any words of wisdom for our listeners out there?
And if you remember, no. If you can, if you correctly guess the amount of words that Ryan has said this.
No, that was just one time. Nobody emailed in. Nobody wanted a free copy of Oblivion. So
yeah, that's right. You guys all blew it out there.
I'm not sponsoring any more contests.
And after
out of
we
the goodness
went off
of
there,
my heart.
Ryan told us he'd give it to the first person who wrote in.
Yep.
Very Nobody. Quickly, just to keep us honest, what did we all play this weekend?
Battle
for Middle Earth 2.
Red Orchestra Ostfront.
Nice. Are you liking it?
Yeah, long story liking it, but it's frustrating and fun by turns, just largely if you're winning or losing. But
it's fun if you're winning and frustrating if you're losing.
That describes all games, but I think it's even more so in a very realistic sim sort of game like that.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're thinking shooter, think more sim. So
so forget it then. I'm not playing it.
I mean, maybe more of it, but not always twitch skill. Sometimes thinking and understanding the way that the game works.
So it's not like, you know, a Battlefield 1942. There's actually, like, you know, you got to slow down the pace some.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing. So, like, it'll take me forever.
Okay.
Let's not get into it.
All right.
Subject for a future podcast.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
It'd be a good one for next time.
Mr. Gladstone, your gaming weekend?
It was like an all IDOS weekend for me, apparently. I was playing the new Tomb Raider, which, surprisingly, doesn't suck. I'm really happy that they're actually getting back to their roots on that one.
Mm-hmm.
And I also started playing Commandos Strike Force. And
cool. That it?
That's it. Those are the two games that occupied my weekend.
And it was all Battle for Middle Earth 2 for me, too. And it was quite good. I was really happy. And so, Ryan, you and I have to play multiplayer. And I have to say, I never thought a game where Tom Bombadil was actually a unit in the game would actually be good. And not only is it good, but that unit is good. Have you used Tom Bombadil yet?
I haven't.
Fool. I'll kill you.
Tom Bombadil.
Polarized by Bombadil.
On that note.
Okay. On that note, we are out. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.